Hi, this is Mary, and welcome to my podcast, Mental State, where I dive into all things mental health and more. Today, I'm talking to my fellow therapist and colleague, Adam Boardman, who specializes in mental health for athletes and perfectionism. So today, Adam and I are going to talk about how to find a therapist. I think that this is a really important topic because I feel like I know that when I was initially looking for a therapist way back when, there weren't a lot of resources. And I actually think the first therapist I ever had when I was in college was a therapist that worked at a community therapy center. I think that actually this was when I was in Berkeley, and I think I saw somebody who was at the Wright Institute. And I literally remember me sitting in a chair, and the other person was sitting in a chair, some just crappy office chair. And I remember that she was asking me questions about my parents, and I was too smart for my own good. And I literally was thinking, you know, I was literally like, this is like way too cliche. And then I never went back.
Like, oh my God, this is such a cliche. It's so cringe.
I know. I was like, I had read, I mean, I think at that point I had read a lot of Freud and Jung, and I just felt like, oh, just tell me about your parents. And, you know, at the moment I wasn't, that's not what I was. I mean, I probably was there for that at the end of the day, but in the moment I didn't feel like that's what I was there for. And so it was kind of like one of those typical intakes that you find at a community counseling center. So I don't feel like, I mean, I know that we talk a lot about attunement, but I don't feel like that therapist was really attuning to what I was there for. It felt like she needed to fill out this sheet, and I didn't feel like it was, I was getting therapy.
Yeah, I absolutely relate to that. I think that's pretty common for people's first experiences with therapy, because a lot of them are in those sorts of settings. My first experiences with therapy were at the college counseling center where I went to school in Claremont. And the first two or three times I went, I was with these people who, again, it felt like they were just sort of like performing therapist.
Yeah. You know?
They're just like, oh, like, tell me about your parents. Is school hard? And you're just like, this isn't what I need right now. Like, like, I'm like so anxious and I can't get a girlfriend. Like, please help. Please hear me. And yeah, I think that that's very common for people to feel like this first experience with therapy, or lots of experiences with therapy, are just with these people who are checking boxes rather than really connecting with them and meeting them where they're at.
Yeah, and I love that you just said, like, I just want to find a, you know, just tell me how to get a girlfriend.
Please, God.
And I mean, please. And where you were at was, you know, probably, you know, there were some relational issues that you wanted to work on, not knowing that how do I get a girlfriend is all part of that. But like, again, it's that community, community counseling centers are so amazing. I worked at one. They are such a good resource, especially if you can't afford therapy or you have financial challenges. So you can get therapy for as little as $5 a session. Just know that you'll be getting therapy with people who are being trained in their very, very early stages of being trained to be a therapist.
Yeah.
And I know that when I was in my community counseling center on the other side as a therapist, when I had my very first client, I was so transparent. I sat down and I said, hey, I just want to let you know that you are my very first client as a therapist. And that's, I still awesome. See that client today.
Hell yeah. That's what I'm talking about. That's so cool. That's actually really brave. I wish I could have done that whenever I was starting as a therapist. I was so self-conscious. I mean, I think one thing you spoke to in your first experience of therapy, which is absolutely important for this discussion and for our audience, is that the self-consciousness that comes with going to therapy for the first time, it also is there for when you're doing therapy for the first time, as we both can relate to. Mm-hmm. You had more courage to actually name it than I did. So props to you, Mary. But it's really easy when you're meeting a new person, even if they're a therapist and they're supposed to be the safe, healing person, to be really self-conscious. And that's something that is different than self-awareness. And we're going to get into that when in this conversation about how to find a great therapist today, because it is, it's something that can be really present. And I super related to that whenever I first went to therapy too, about just being so self-conscious about being like, oh my God, this is so trite. This is such a cliche. I'm so basic right now. And I'm like here, like all like tweaking on anxiety and like this woman in like a soft sweater is like trying to like, I don't even know what she's doing. Okay. Right. A lot going on there.
Looking at me.
Yeah, she's just looking at me and she's not talking.
And she's has a slight smile on her face and she's nodding and understanding. And this feels really uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you had that first experience. Eventually you went back and it sounds like let me ask you a different question. It's like, it sounds like at some point you must have found somebody that you felt like you could really work with. And how was that person different than the one that came before?
So the second therapist I found was actually from a recommendation from a friend. Mm. And that was my first real foray into therapy. And talk about a soft sweater. And I would actually drive. I was living in San Francisco at the time. And I would actually drive across the bridge to Marin County to see this person in their very cozy wooded setting.
Yeah.
And I just remember her. She was like so kind and soft and exactly what I needed. And being a client and feeling so self-conscious and so broken. And it was in that showing up every week to this person that, I don't know, there was something very grounding about it. It was like, this is something, my life was in total chaos during that time. And this is something that I could tether to.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that was my experience with my therapist in my 20s too. Was that my life was in chaos. And oh my gosh, this is someone who's solid, who's cohesed, who's some sort of, if not anchor, just mooring that's like gonna like mitigate all this tumult that I'm living through all the time. So if you're speaking to maybe your younger self or people who are looking to go to therapy for the first time or looking to go find a good connection with a therapist for the first time, what are some rules of thumb that you have that you recommend for people or you'd recommend for your younger self? Either way, maybe both.
Oh. Don't walk, run to therapy.
Yes.
I mean, I
do not pick up and put down the phone, go to therapy.
Actually, my first experience in therapy was with a child psychologist, and I was so constricted and contracted at the time that I couldn't even have a conversation with this person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And looking back, I've talked to my mom about this. I said, God, I really wish I had been forced to continue to go to this person because it probably would have helped me a lot.
Sure.
It was recommended that I go at the time. And, you know, I guess I felt like I was being forced to do it. So I was a very stubborn child. So I was like, I'm not going to talk to this person. And I think I barely talked to this person for however long it was. And again, it was just like, I remember I was sitting on a chair next to her desk and she was sitting at the desk asking me questions. So these environments weren't really inviting, right? So my first two environments were not inviting. There was like no soft sofa. There was no like mid-century modern art on the wall that we all got from Etsy. I mean, there was like none of that, you know, these were not inviting settings that were like, oh, I really want to come back because this feels really warm and open to me. It just felt more clinical.
Yeah.
So to that note, you know, we talk a lot about rapport. You know, we really want to be able to get along with our therapist. And so what I would do is I would recommend people like ask your friends who they go to if they have a therapist.
Right. Or, great. So good.
Yeah. I would, you know, ask her. And if your friends don't have a therapist, then, you know, I think psychology today, it is a behemoth of a resource, but I think it is a good resource. But, you know, you can search and put a specific search for like, you know, trauma therapy in Santa Monica.
Yeah.
And I also, you know, recommend you know, reading through the profiles and seeing if any of these words resonate with you.
Yeah.
And I would recommend, literally, I mean, we talk about finding a therapist is like dating. I would recommend like finding four or five therapists and calling all of them up and seeing, you know, who responds to you and making appointments. You know, most therapists give free 15 or 20 minute consultation calls.
Exactly.
I would also say if a therapist, and this is just my own thing, but if a therapist charges for a consultation call, that may not be the therapist that will work out for you. And so I think that it's also important to have, you know, a lot of questions for your therapist, and don't be shy about asking questions, because you're here to have a what might possibly be a long-term relationship with somebody. And so I think it's important to get as much information as possible that's going to make you feel comfortable. I even have on my website, you know, like questions that you might want to ask a therapist. And so I think it's important just to know like what it is, you know, really sit down and think about like, what are the issues that I want to work on?
Right.
And do I want a male therapist? Do I want a female therapist? What feels comfortable for me? And also really thinking about financially what you can afford. Do I want to go through insurance? Do I not want to go through insurance? Mm-hmm. What can I afford? So I think those are like the three top things that I would recommend in finding a therapist.
Absolutely. And you speaking to the structural, like sort of frame of it, the logistical realities, to use a less flowery term, is just, do they work on my schedule when I can meet them? Can I afford them? Are they in network if I need to use insurance, or with, you know, super bills, or just out of pocket? Like, is that something that can work for my budget? Because you have to go into a therapy relationship. You don't have to, but it's wise to go into a therapy relationship with knowing that there's someone, if you do decide to see them for the medium to long term, it's going to work in your life, that there's still space in your life for that kind of connection and healing. And so that's work you have to do at the front end to only really engage with the therapists that are going to work for you, just sort of structurally, right?
Yeah. And also I think that, you know, there are, and I'm not throwing shade or anything, but there are a lot of therapists who get their master's in psychology and do their hours and pass the test, and that's that, right? And for me, I think therapy and learning and education, it's like it's a lifelong pursuit. And I think that it's really important to also find out like what other professional training and experience the therapist has, because if the therapist just says like, oh, well, I went to, you know, I got my graduate degree and I've been a therapist for, you know, whatever, 5 years, and they haven't really pursued anything outside of that. It, for me, it just gives pause, because it's just like, we know the big secret is,
yeah,
how much do you really learn in graduate school, right?
Right.
I feel like most of the training, most of the things that I've learned about being a therapist has been because I've engaged in these trainings and learning about psychology. It's just like a lifelong pursuit, but I think it's really important for therapists to have some extra training, because for me, it tells me that this person is really engaged and interested in the field that they've chosen as their profession.
Absolutely. You don't want to go to a doctor who went to medical school in the 80s or 90s, no, but then never read another medical journal article since. You know, they've never gone to a conference. It's like, no, like medicine grows and evolves and changes, and so does the doctor and their ability to see see symptoms as and conjure diagnoses and like meet a patient where they're at. Same thing goes for therapists. You're constantly having to not necessarily stay up on the research like you would in medicine, but you need to stay up on yourself to, and this is something that I think we all can demand of therapists. Are you still growing? Are you still doing the work of understanding yourself and growing your skill set to support the work that the client's doing of understanding themselves and growing their relational skill set? This is something we're all doing together. And yeah, for you, that sounds really important. And that's a good sign for a strong therapist. Are they working on themselves? What is their philosophy and approach? Because ultimately, the question we all have to answer when going to therapy, whether it's from the financial side or the schedule or the theoretical orientation or the issues they work with or whatever, is this someone that I can be close to in an authentic way, in an open-ended growth way? Can this relationship grow in the same ways that I want to grow? And that's only really possible if someone can meet you and, you know, you can emerge with them. And that's not always possible with everybody. I mean, you go on a date, you know, when I was dating, I would always, like I said, I think in the last episode, it's like, pay attention to what version of yourself comes out. I would absolutely encourage anybody looking for a therapist to do the same exact thing. Is this someone who I feel immediately hyper self-conscious about? Do I feel like super judged by them? Do I feel like it's hard to find things to talk about? Or is it just sort of, is there an ease to it where they're, you know, yes, they're smart enough to, you know, they're smart enough to and interested enough, they're paying attention to me. But also, like, I just feel like, oh, I'm kind of myself right now. That is a great sign. That is a great rule of thumb. How much of myself do I feel obviously in this 15 or 20 minute initial conversation? If you feel pretty good about yourself, like, oh, they seem easy to talk to, great sign. Great sign. Not the only thing, but that's a great sign.
I mean, I think that's a really important point to bring up in that, in the consultation, is that, yeah, if you're feeling awkward in the consultation, and I just mean, and I think we mean awkward in the dynamic, because yeah. I mean, I can be awkward and feel awkward, but that's just like my own stuff. But I think that it's like, yeah, if you're feeling awkward, or if you're feeling like it's not flowing, or if you feel like you're not being heard or listened to, or even if you hear that there are a lot of distractions in the background in the consultation call, like, I think that's a really good sign. Somebody told me that they did a initial Zoom meeting or something with a therapist, not a consultation call, but a Zoom meeting. And they saw like a bunch of dead plants in the background. And the person said, if this person can't take care of their plants, how are they going to take care of a client? And I was so like, good. Wow, that is, I mean, what a great observation that this person made.
To all the therapists out there listening, water your plants.
Or get fake ones.
Or get fake ones. Yeah, even better. it's great. And that's something that, to that person, that's a great read. You know, that's how they feel. Then if they moved forward, that person would be in the back of their head the whole time, you know? So good for them. Yeah, keep moving. That sounds great.
And also, I mean, yeah, and in terms of even talking about keeping moving, it's like, just because you have a few sessions with your therapist, if you don't feel like it's working out, well, the first thing I recommend is, and this is really, really hard work, is to actually talk to your therapist, tell your therapist, like, hey, this isn't working for me, because you can have a dialogue about that. And that actually might be, you know, there may be a rupture happening. I mean, the therapist might be feeling the same way, not really sure how to address it, because it is the first few sessions. So a lot of times as therapists, we might be like, wow, it feels like this isn't really working, but I don't really know what's, you know, and so we just want to wait a few sessions to see if anything emerges. But I think if a client brings it up, it's like, it's such good material, because that can actually help repair and move the therapy forward, where that may be a pattern in, you know, the client's life, where it's like, I don't speak up for myself. And I just leave situations. We talk about avoidant attachment. Like, instead of talking about how this isn't working, let me just leave and, oh, I'll find another therapist. And so I think that can be really important. And then also, you know, just know that the therapist is going to want you to have the best therapist that works for you. Yeah. So the therapist isn't going to get mad at you or be disappointed in you. I think it's actually kind of like a celebration if the therapist is feeling like, yeah, maybe I'm not the right therapist for you.
Right.
But now I feel like I know enough about you that I can actually refer you to somebody who I think would work better. Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to lead to better results. Mm-hmm. You're going to, and better therapy with better outcomes. Because if you're on the client side and you really feel like something's off in the therapy session, that is the number one thing to talk about. And I let my clients know that, like, if it's anything, they're obviously welcome to talk about their lives or whatever the problem they came to talk about. But like anything that has to do with you and me between therapist and client, like that's the first most important thing to talk about, because that's often the richest, just because that's where some of the issues are showing up. So yeah, if you get a couple sessions into a therapist with a therapist before you just bail, give it a shot to bring that up, because one of two things are going to happen and they're both good. A, you might realize that there's something tied to your issues that are also being experienced by the therapist, and you can have a more human, authentic moment, and then maybe have a breakthrough and realize, oh, this wasn't working because we weren't dealing with this. Now that we're dealing with this, now not only is it working, but we have this shared win to work off of. The other outcome is you say, hey, listen, I don't really feel like this is working. And if they get defensive, if they shut you down, if they invalidate you, if they don't really give you a response that feels satisfying and it doesn't feel like the first example, then it validates your instincts that this wasn't the right fit in the first place. And to keep moving and look for the right fit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love that, because I feel like sometimes I think that, you know, even a client may not know what they're looking for until mm-hmm. they're in the therapy. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, oh, I wanted a therapist that would give me more tools. And then the therapist sure. can say, like, I'm not that kind of therapist.
Yeah.
I don't do that work. Mm-hmm. I don't, but I can help you. You know, if you're looking for a cognitive behavioral therapist, yeah. I can definitely point you in the right direction to that sure. type of therapist. The other thing is that what I hear a lot is, I've heard, you know, sometimes we have these great therapists that we work with, and because the rapport is so good and wonderful, we don't want to leave them, but we know that the time is up.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, that's another thing to look at, because it's like, oh, I probably should have had this conversation 4 months ago with my therapist, but I love my therapist and, you know, we have such great rapport. I don't want to leave. And so it is kind of it is a relationship that we develop. And, you know, we know that, like, we probably won't ever see this person again.
Yeah.
And so I think that's hard too. And the other thing, I don't know why I just went off on that tangent, but what I really wanted to say is, what I've heard is that, like, again, I love that we're having this conversation about how to find a great therapist, and it should be how to find a great therapist for you.
That's
because, right? Because I might be somebody's great therapist. Yeah. I mean, I know I'm somebody's great therapist, and I also know I'm not everybody's great therapist. And sometimes what I hear people saying is, they feel bad because they're kind of like as the client, like they've committed to therapy, and then mm-hmm. they have a therapist that might just look at them and nod and only reflect back. And they're looking for somebody who might be, they want somebody a little bit more involved or direct, or I don't know, just something. And so a lot of times I do hear clients saying that they just end up staying with that therapist because they don't know what else to do. So what would you recommend with somebody who feels stuck in a therapeutic relationship and the therapist isn't working for them?
Yeah.
But they don't know how to get out of it.
I think this should be our follow-up episode, is how to, and not only how to, this is how to find a great therapist. The next one is going to be an hour on when to break up with your therapist and how to do it. Cause I think this is really important. This is such a universe of a topic in and of itself, but you're absolutely right. Like, if you're feeling that, like, you have a response, I would argue that, let me speak for myself. I have a responsibility to myself to also show up in that therapy room for myself. And it's not my job to take care of the therapist. And if I am having doubts, if I'm having concerns, it's, no one can read my mind, including my therapist. So it's my job to show up with that and bring it to the room. And if it's not received in a way that feels right to me, and I think that everybody has to make up their own mind about what that means, like, does this feel supportive, or does this feel like I'm really having to compromise myself for my therapist, which is, I don't think, how it's supposed to work. So yeah, I mean, at some point you may realize this person isn't what I need right now, or maybe they're just not what you want. And if they're not what you want, you're totally allowed to leave. Like, as the client, you get to decide, is this what I want to need right now? And if that person doesn't match it, even if they may be from some objective higher power point of view, the therapist that you need right now, if you don't want to go to them, you don't have to. If you want to go to somebody who's more skills-based, great. If you want to go to somebody who's more works in some different way, or is it of a different gender or whatever, you get to make the call. But it's also important that you own that. Yeah, but it is hard. It's hard to do that work. And it can be scary, especially if you don't have a lot of experience with therapists, or you feel like, oh, I need to work myself. And maybe I'm abandoning therapy by abandoning this therapist, but maybe it just isn't the right fit. And sometimes our feelings are trying to tell us that. So it's our job to show up in the session and confront our therapist with it and be like, hey, I really don't know if this is working. And that could be because you have your own doubts about and attachment issues about relationships, or it could be because it's not working.
Yeah.
And the only way you're going to find out is by really bringing that to it.
Yeah. And I do love that you talked about like the attachment issues to relationships, because that's the hard thing. It's like, is this not working because it's not working? It's also like, how much am I actually showing up for my own therapy?
Yes. I have my own. I would love to hear your version of this, Mary, but I had a hard time finding the right therapists for me. I've had probably 3 great therapists in my life, and each one of them fits a same bill. And I've started over the course of my life with, I don't know, half a dozen or maybe even more other therapists, where I went to 1 or 2 sessions and was like, oh my God, no, I cannot do this. And I think that everybody has to figure out who they, like, kind of what setting, combination, sort of vibe works for them. Because for me, like, people who are super smart, super like the analysts, like they were a little cold. That was so hard for me to deal with. I couldn't deal with someone who didn't have a natural warmth and really high emotional intelligence. Right. And empathic power is sort of how I think about it. I call it empathic horsepower. That was really present. But I also went to people who it almost felt like they were underboundaried, because they'd be just like, so just like, oh my God, it's so hard for you. I really feel for you. And you're like, it was almost too much. And I didn't feel like they had this sort of analytical like orientation, if not capacity, to also kind of keep up with how being insufferably analytical I can be. You know what I mean? Like, which is my thing. Because, I needed someone who was smart enough to not let me manipulate them with my own issues. You know what I mean? And for better or worse, like, that's just, I had to be honest with who I am as a person. And so finding that combination was always, once I'd been to enough of these, that was the combination I always looked for. Yes, they need to be smart, but smarts aren't the only thing. Yes, they need to be empathic, but it's not the only thing. But I do need pretty high levels of both of those things in order for me to feel safe enough to kind of let the real me come out. And because that's what it's all about. It's discovering the real me. It's becoming the real me. And if you're going to therapy, that's what I would hope to support in any of my clients. And I'm sure that you agree with me on this, Mary, is that like, we want people to become whole and healed and authentic. And so who is this person what do I need from this person for that, this environment to be created where that can happen? I'm curious, what are your settings? What are your things that you have to look for when you're finding therapy?
I think it's also more challenging when you're a therapist and you have a therapist, because there can be this very like familial bond that's developed, and it feels like, oh, we're also colleagues as well. So I think it's kind of a complicated question, because I feel like I'm less in therapy now to do therapy, and I'm more in therapy now as a professional. I now seek out therapists that can also be mentors to me as well.
Absolutely. I am lucky that I found a therapist at the beginning of grad school that I've had for, I don't know, the last 8 years now.
Wow.
And or maybe 7 or 8 years. Yeah. And he's a total expert. He's been around forever, and it's great. And there's so much trust there. So I've sort of grown into that with him. And I'm sure my experience now would be way more complicated being a clinician trying to find a therapist, but I still vividly remember my experience pre-grad school of trying to find therapists. And I think the things we talked about today absolutely apply. You named, ask a friend, like ask someone that, the best therapist I found, I asked someone who I was already close to, who I'm like, this is someone I connect with, who is, I think, kind of experiences the world broadly in a similar way to me, and how they see it, how they experience their sensitivity, their sort of intellectual organization, whatever it is, I feel connected to this person and they have a therapist that works. I want to meet that person. When you go into the room, you know what, like, does it feel like I can be myself? Is it something that, like, it's obviously a risk. You're making a bet. It's a small sample size of 15, 20 minutes. But, you know, if they work for my finances, my schedule, and my intuition, yeah, you can move forward confidently. Get a couple sessions in. Hopefully it flows. If not, hey, maybe check in with the therapist and be like, I want to talk about how I don't know if this is really working or not, and see what they say. If they match you, hopefully it's a breakthrough. If it isn't, maybe it's time to move on. And I've found that those things have really served me. And hopefully, I know if and when my therapist retires, which I hope he never does, I'm probably going to be going through that same exact process again.
So when you were going through that, I also thought about, like, what are your expectations for your therapist? I think that's a great thing to talk about with your therapist. What are your expectations of therapy? Yeah. And I know that when people work in certain specializations, people are like, okay, I want to do this certain kind of therapy. How many sessions is it going to take? Mm-hmm. Right. And so obviously we don't know that, but I think that these are great questions that people ask, because that is an expectation. Is therapy going to be this quick fix, or are you interested in investing, or can you invest in a longer term relationship with a therapist in the healing?
Your mentality, or the client's mentality going into therapy, is so important, because that it can also really be a real barrier to change. Hopefully the therapist can spot that, or that the client can bring it, and that's something they can work out so that they are on the same page. Because if someone comes in, how are you going to fix me in four sessions or less? Or I just want tools. I don't want to go deep. I just want tools. The more that you can be aware of what your expectations are, can also set the therapist and you up for a great connection and a great relationship.
Ooh, I love that.
It's so funny when we're talking about this. It makes me remember whenever I started in my 20s, and when I started therapy, how averse I was of confrontation, and how hard it was for me to learn how to confront my therapist. And my first great therapist was totally held my hand through all this, about being like, do you want more from this relationship? Like, what do you want to tell me? What would you want to talk about? And at one point she's like, do you want to see me more than once a week? And I did. And I think that, like, she helped me own that and, like, bring it to it in a, which is a form of confrontation, to be like, hey, look, I really do feel this way. I really do need this thing. And it might not be pretty. It might not be what you want or what you like, or what I even think is okay, but I need to just voice that. And my college therapist absolutely helped me do that. And now I'm like, I go into therapy and I am like, absolutely like the fucking SWAT team, where I will, like, rappel down. Sorry, I don't know if you can swear on this. I am absolutely like the SWAT team, where it's like, I'm rappelling through and, like, kicking down the door and me like, these are my feelings. This is my confrontation right now. I am so mad, you know, like, just like flamethrower. Because I realize now what therapy is, and I also, my therapist and I have trust around each other. This is for me to be whatever version I am of myself as fully as possible. And it's the space for me to inhabit parts of myself that maybe are harder for me to inhabit in other parts of my life. And I need therapists who can handle that, who can see me and still connect with me amidst all that. And so therapy is about me. If you're the client, it's about you. You set the terms. You let the therapist know what you need, and hopefully they'll be able to match you, support you, catch you, whatever it is in those moments. And if you aren't feeling that, it's on you to address it, and if necessarily, find a new therapist.
Ooh, I think that's a great place to end. And I love the image of the SWAT team.
Yeah.
Right. And that
kicking the door. Here we are. Here's feelings.
Go, go, go.
Yeah. Go, 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 go.
And that the therapy is the container where you can Yeah, where you can allow all of those parts of yourself to, yes, you know, that we may be muting in real life or in other parts of our lives, where it's, yes, I can let all of this stuff out and throw it out all on the table and we can sort through it. And if you feel like your therapist is there for you and ready to sort through it, then that is the therapist for you. Stay with that person.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Nothing more I love than a great therapist.
Or whatever they say in the Marines. Booyah, booyah.
Hoorah. It's hoorah.
Hoorah.
Not to appropriate anybody's culture here. I think that's what they say. So any Marines out there, please leave us comments in the show notes.
Yes, please leave us.
Or whatever. We leave us a comment.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Adam, for this amazing conversation. And to everyone else, you can learn more about Adam at
AdamBoardmanMFT.com.
AdamBoardmanMFT.com. And I am MaryBTherapy.com. And thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.
And feel free to reach out with any comments, questions, anything at all. And if you have a chance, rate our podcast at Apple Podcasts.